everyone, and welcome to this episode of Apartment Investing for Early Retirement. Today's guest is Jerome Myers. Jerome leads the Myers Development Group, which focuses on buying broken apartment building businesses and using innovative thinking and solid execution strategies to optimize the operational efficiency of the business. Currently, Mr. Myers is asset manager for approximately 90 units and 90,000 square feet of workforce housing across Virginia and North Carolina, and is on a mission to hold 1,000 doors by the end of 2028. When not actively working on his personal portfolio, he coaches other real estate investors on the Myers methods of multifamily investing. Outside of real estate, Jerome hosts the Dreamcatchers and Myers Methods Presents Multifamily Missteps podcast. On this episode, we discuss some of the challenges that investors have to overcome to be able to get into real estate and be successful in real estate, as well as digging into the difference between joint ventures and syndications, and why Jerome prefers to use the joint venture method to be able to acquire and hold multifamily properties. Jerome, welcome to the show.
Derek, so glad to be with you. Thanks for having me, man.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking the time to come on. Why don't we just jump right into it? And would you mind just giving our listeners a little bit more about your background, your story, kind of how you got to where you're at today?
Yeah, man. So I'm the son of a stay-at-home mom and a soldier. I grew up in the same house, even though I was a military brat for 18 years, left, went to college, studied civil engineering at North Carolina Agricultural and Technical State University in Greensboro, North Carolina. Played football for 4 years there. Left and became a structural engineer. A few years in that role, got on the leadership track, was identified as a high potential at my company. And so got some coaching, got some exclusive opportunities, and was able to grow my income pretty rapidly. And so, you know, in my mid-20s, I was a six-figure earner in Virginia, which was pretty good considering what all my peers were doing. Continue down that path, leave that company, go to a couple of other ones, and right before I drop out of corporate America, I get the opportunity to build a $20 million business for this construction company. I showed up as employee number two with $0. And by the end of the year, we had $6 million in profit on $20 million of billings. And I got the great fortune of Christmas Eve of getting news that I needed to lay off half the staff that we built up over that year. And it frustrated me. I promised myself I would never do it again. Fast forward till Thanksgiving of the next year, getting the exact same message. We got to do layoffs again. And so at that point, I decided I was going to drop out of corporate America and go out and start doing real estate full time. I'd been playing with real estate through hard money lending to fix and flippers prior to that. And, you know, when I got that message the second time, I went back to a conversation I was having on the stoop with one of my friends in college. And we were doing what engineers do, right? We were doing math in our free time. I was multiplying the amount of rent that our unit was paying, and we added in his unit. Then we multiplied around the complex, and we realized that the owner was making $700,000 a year top line revenue at that complex. And for us, we never saw him. We never talked to him. We didn't know anything about it, but we knew that he had figured out how to decouple his time from money. And we wanted to do that. But if we go all the way back to my roots, Derek, you know, I was the son of a soldier and a stay-at-home mom. There weren't any wealthy people coming to our house to talk entrepreneurship, asking us to invest in their deals or any of that other stuff. And so I didn't have access to the right network to get into the game. This was before all the YouTube and the podcast and all that stuff. And so the world has changed pretty dramatically. And, you know, thank you for being a contributor to that body of knowledge of real estate investing and alternative ways of being able to create financial freedom. And, you know, it was great to hear you share the story before we hopped on about your parents listening to your podcast and being open to other opportunities, because I think this is the greatest way for people to achieve that success.
Yeah. And it's just, I think for so many people, you know, you're aware of it. You came from the same boat. Is you're always told to do it a specific way. You know, 401ks, your stocks, your mutual funds, that's how you build that, those finances up for retirement. And there is another way. And there's one that, in our opinion, gives you more security, more control, and it's a tangible asset. You can go there, you can touch it, you know, but until your eyes are open to it, you never really think, it's always, I can never do that. I can maybe get a single family house, a duplex, you know, a couple of those, but I can never get a large one of these huge apartment buildings. Well, there is ways. You just have to, you know, and now it's so easy to access that knowledge. And, you know, you've been on countless shows, and it's, you know, just sharing that, getting that word out and opening up your ears, your mind, to other opportunities. So yeah, thank you, you know, for doing what you do. And, you know, I'm just trying to do my small part to help people out. But, you know, with switching, you know, into real estate, kind of getting into that realm, you know, what were some barriers, some challenges that you kind of dealt with and how you overcame them?
So, you know, I walked out of that job and was like, all right, I'm going to buy an apartment. So I'm beating on the door of all these different banks. And I go to the first one, I'm like, oh, I've never been rejected. What do you mean? Okay. So I go to the second one, and like, yeah, no. And I was like, okay. So I go to the third one and I lay it out. I've got a engineering license. I got an MBA. I just built a $20 million business. I got 800 credit score. I got money in the bank. What do you mean you don't want to lend me $1 million in order to buy this thing that's making money? Yeah, you don't have any experience. And so I go back through the qualification, right? And add on some more, a Six Sigma Master Black Belt, project management professional. And they say, no, you don't have experience. And so what was experience? Experience was signing on a loan with the bank for income producing property, specifically apartment complex. I didn't have that experience, and I didn't know anybody that had that experience. And so I wasn't a real candidate for getting in a loan or getting into a deal. And so what I had to do was go fix and flip houses. And by immersing myself in the investor community, I met somebody that had done the deal. And he brought it up when he was checking out my property and said, hey, I'm getting ready to make an offer on this property. What do you know about it? And I was like, man, I tried to buy that 4 or 5 months ago and I didn't work out because I didn't have experience. He was like, well, yeah, I'm going to make an offer on it. He's like, please don't leave me out the deal. Like, I've been waiting for this opportunity. And he made the offer anyway, because he didn't need me, right? He had money, he had experience, he had the deal, he didn't need me. And so bringing things full circle, I talked to somebody else about the deal when I was first trying to pursue it or purchase it. And they had the opportunity, they talked to him because he made the offer, it didn't get accepted. And so they brought my buddy in and he was like, well, I'm not doing it unless Jerome does it, because he brought this to me first. And so, you know, it's the three amigos. And then we add on a property manager and we add on the broker who brought the deal. And so Safago is going to take down this $1.27 million apartment deal with a heavy value add component. And so we go through that and I learn what a good partnership looks like. And I learn what a good partnership doesn't look like. I learn about stop signs that you run through. One of my favorite examples is I was not excited to go into the deal until we had certain things done. Specifically asset management contract signed, property management contract signed, general contract signed. And they were like, if Jerome's not just going to pony up and do the thing, then we'll just buy his equity and leave him out of the deal. And I should have known then that, hey, you know, respect, honor, dignity are all things that have to be a part of the partnership. And, you know, just because you have more money doesn't make you more important, although you do have a bigger voice based on the ownership model that most people use. And so, you know, it was those things. I didn't have a ton of experience in doing this, but I did have experience in other industries that I felt like I could bring to the table, to the team.
Yeah, and kind of as you've gone, what have you kind of found as the strength, you know, that you really take charge on in your joint ventures?
So I'm really... right, or I don't even know if I can say it, but I will, right? I'm pretty good at asset management. So I'm a data guy. And so I'm able to go through the data, figure out what's happening based on what the data says, not just gut or intuition, and then make decisions based on that. There's a lot of people who just want to wing it, and I see them flying in the dark a lot. You know, as we think about rent collections and, all right, where are we normally at on the 5th? Where are we at when it's time to file for eviction? Where are we at when we get to court? How much are we collecting by the end of the month, or how much is lagging 30 to 60 days behind? And, you know, having those things in hand to make decisions is important. Being able, because I've got a pretty extensive project management background, you know, I'm able to look at the rehabs and see some of the hurdles that need to be overcome and try to plan for those. Have I been completely successful at getting them all out? No, but I don't think anybody else is. And so just being able to foresee and plan for, you know, some of those issues that will come up is important. And I think maybe the only other thing that I can offer is, you know, I learn very rapidly. I consume a ton of content and I'm always looking for ways to get better. And so I've got this focus on continuous improvement. And yeah, there is good enough and diminishing returns. But, you know, the flip side of that is, what else can you do? Because the buildings are valued based on how much money you can make for them. And so if you can figure out how to get some more money out of the deal, if from an income side, or how you can reduce expenses to grow that net operating income, I'm all about looking for those opportunities. And you have to pair that, though. It's not just numbers, right? You have to pair that with the real world. You have to remember that people are involved in the process and trying to create that balancing act. And so I think that project management piece from my background shows up really well there as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's always interesting kind of the path that you take and for a certain reason, and, you know, to be able to get into it and, yeah, be very analytical about it. But still, you know, you're interacting with people, like you said. You know, you don't want to be the person that, like you said, you didn't want to be at your last, that at that job, because you had to lay people off right after Christmas or right around Thanksgiving. Like, that's not something you want to do, you know, and especially now in the challenging times that we're in right now and will be for an unspecified amount in the future. You know, everyone's going through, you know, various stages of difficulty and challenge with coronavirus going on, and knowing that you're still dealing with people, you can still meet your business plans, meet what you have coming in, and still treat people like people. You know, obviously it's a case by case basis for where people are at, but having that understanding of, you know, this is real world. This, it's not just numbers on a spreadsheet. It is people that you're dealing with.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that was one of the most sobering things that I found in doing due diligence inspections and seeing how people are living and understanding that a lot of owners have cognitive dissonance, right? Their residents don't live in the same world that they live in, and they're okay letting them live in squalor. That is an issue that we have. And, you know, we look for that in the properties that we're purchasing, and it confirms and reaffirms that we should be doing what we're doing. I think the importance of actually having a social piece to your mission and positively impacting the environment or the community is necessary for, you know, entrepreneurial work. It's not just about how much money you can make. It's about the impact that you can make on the world.
And again, you know, if you have a property, it could be the eyesore of the neighborhood. You change that property around, you know, the people that are living there, you know, some might leave, but if there's some that stay, you change the way that, you know, where it might be, I don't really enjoy going home because it's not necessarily the best environment for them, a place that, you know, it's my home. I feel, you know, I'm proud about where I live. I look forward to going home. The neighborhood changes. You're changing their, you know, you can change their outlook for just kind of how landlords are. You know, you get a lot of times landlords get a bad rap for, you know, being just this evil, you know, money driven person that's, they don't care about me. They just want my rent check. Well, those landlords are out there, yes. But when you do the right thing, you know, there's a way to do the right thing and make plenty of money so you can continue to help more and more people. So that's great. And, you know, it's great to talk to people about that have had success doing it, where, you know, yes, it's the real side. It's real life, you know? So it's always great to hear. So I thank you for what you do with that, you know, being able to help people along the way, you know, with the challenges, you know, what you kind of had to overcome a little bit of challenges at first. A lot of the listeners that I do have are investors that are, you know, starting to get into multifamily. You know, maybe they've had some single families, duplexes scaling up, or they're new and they just want to start into it. What are some challenges that people really need to expect to have to overcome? You know, it's not all sunshine and rainbows. It's tough, but would you mind touching on some of those?
Yeah, there's some unicorns in the sunshine and rainbows, and sometimes they poke you a little bit. I think every investor has four challenges, and it's just a matter of the magnitude of the challenge that they're dealing with. One is knowledge, and that's the foundation. If you think about a pyramid, we're going to go up the pyramid. So knowledge is the first one. The second one is deal flow. The third one is experience, and the last one is capital. A lot of people decide not to get started because they don't have capital. But that is it's at the apex. It's the problem that everybody has to address, but it doesn't keep you from getting started. Get as much knowledge as you can. Once you have knowledge, you can start vetting leads. You can determine whether or not a lead is a deal or not. Once you know that you have a deal, then you go find experience to execute against a business plan. And once you have the experience, the capital will follow. A lot of people say, if you have a deal, the money will show up. You have to have the experience to get the smart money to show up. And so these are the four challenges. And this is, from my perspective, the order that you need to solve those challenges in, right? If you go try to raise money, you don't have any experience, smart money's not going to come to you. In fact, you've eliminated the opportunity for smart money to ever invest with you. If you don't have knowledge, you can't tell the difference between a lead and a deal. And so get the knowledge so that you can do that. If you have a deal, but you don't have experience, you're not going to fund. And so once you figure out how to get a deal, you need to be growing your network of investors. And I mean, there's a ton of people that are in the space. They may not all be willing to partner, right? That's one of the challenges. But if you have a real deal, you can potentially get the opportunity to partner with somebody. But that is you bringing something to the table. Experience is always looking for deals. And if they got a deal that can be executed, they're going to be glad to participate in it. And then, you know, you need experience in order to bring money, and money's always looking for experienced operators because smart money feels safe when they have an experienced operator repeating something that they've done successfully in the past. And so, you know, that is the hierarchy. I knew I had to solve all four of those problems. I didn't know the right order to solve them in. And I spent my wills a lot trying to figure out the puzzle. But again, you know, go knowledge, deal flow, experience, capital. It's a winning recipe.
And, you know, when you're starting out, when you're switching in, obviously you have those challenges that you need to overcome. Experience. That was one that you didn't necessarily think about it at first. You're just getting told no. You're getting told no. You're getting told no. And it goes on. You know, how do you kind of have that positive mindset to be able to get through that? You know, you've obviously been able to overcome it, but how did that help? And, you know, how important really is that when you're starting out?
Yeah, I mean, if you're not excited and invigorated about this new thing you're doing, you're probably already lost, right? I do think there is some rejection. There is some challenge that comes with coming into the space. And that's just with anything. Fortunately for me, I played sports for, you know, a long time. And if I made a mistake on the football field, I had to forget about it because the next play was coming. And so I get to apply that same thought process and mentality to multifamily investing and all the other stuff that I do on a daily basis. I think anybody has had some form of rejection. And if you don't want any rejection in your life, then this isn't for you. But if you can get okay with it, if you can get okay with continuing to try repeatedly, and know, if you know that you're on the right path, keep working until you actually, you know, hit that vein of gold, then I think you are going to end up being pretty successful in the space. A lot of this is who persists. It's not about being the smartest. It's not about having the best network. It's about being able to persist through all the challenges and make it through the downs so that you can experience the ups. And so if you've got the ability to, you know, just continue to go, not give up, not quit, success is imminent.
And, you know, so many times, you know, people, they give up and they're so close, you know, it could be the next one that comes across the table, but they just had, you know, just keep fighting forward. And, you know, the big thing for me was meeting more and more people that are doing what I want to do. You know, I was growing up, I was very introverted. So I would never want to go to events. I finally started breaking out of that. And then I started, you know, once I kind of focused in on multifamily, I didn't really know anyone around my area that was doing it. Since I've met people that have, but I got out of my comfort zone. I started going to events, and just once you do that, you see how, you know, a lot of opportunities are possible. I had a huge portfolio that came, you know, I got a lead on, and it was a deal. It wasn't just a lead, it was a deal. But I went, I can never do 428 units where I'm at right now. Now I know, hey, you talk to people and you're able to kind of sort stuff out. You'd be able to, you know, kind of section it off, but you know, that's a lesson that, you know, I will always remember moving forward, is just, there's a way. If it's a deal, there's a way, but you have to be surrounded by the people with experience, with money. You have to have the knowledge, you know, again, just like what you said, it's, you don't want to miss those opportunities. You don't want to give up, because there's always a way to learn and build towards the next one. Because once it finally hits, it's going to keep rolling if you, you know, if you've built up that knowledge base and the experience. You know, it's, again, it all comes back full circle. But you know, that's just some great stuff. And yeah, just keep persevering through. But you know, kind of back half here, want to touch on JVs, joint ventures, versus syndications. And for some of the listeners that might not be too familiar with the difference, would you mind just touching on that and why you like joint ventures over syndications?
Yeah, so this is probably my favorite metaphor in the world, right? So I like to tell kids from my childhood, and this one is probably one of the best because it actually relates to the present day. And so as a kid, I lived adjacent to the military base, and they actually have fighter jets that flew over the houses, right? And so Blue Angels and all these folks. And I was like, man, I would love to be a fighter pilot. I remember my mom bought me this deck of cards that had the, like, the profile. I guess it's a profile. I don't know. When you look up, you see the bottom of the airplane. And so I was able to use those cards to identify which airplanes were flying overhead. I'm like, man, I would love to be a fighter pilot. Ended up being a little too big to get in one of those cockpits and then go the military route, right? But I thought that would be really cool. So I get to do that with joint ventures. And so when you think about a joint venture, think about everybody having an active role, right? Everybody in the deal is responsible for something at some point. And you don't have any room for passengers in the plane. Everybody's active. With the syndication, think about a jumbo jet. You have the passenger, you have the pilot, you have the co-pilot, stewardess and stewards, and then you have the passengers on the plane with the jumbo jet. And so, you know, they roll it back, and everybody that's sitting in a seat as a passenger paid to get on the plane. And so that's what happens when somebody goes into a syndication. They give the general partnership, which is the people that are working on the plane, a dollar, and they get some fraction of that back in equity in the deal. 70%, 80%, which would be, you know, 70 cent or 80 cent on the dollar. And in that space, you know, those folks are just getting an opportunity to go along for the ride. They're not responsible for anything. They don't pass out snacks. They don't pass out drinks. They don't do any of that stuff. They're just there for the ride, and with the hope of getting some form of return. With the joint venture, everybody's responsible for some piece of that. And so there aren't any passengers on the plane, and you guys are maximizing the property and in a business partnership. And so that's the way that I describe joint ventures and syndications. And I'm in the wealth creation phase. And I guess the last thing I'll do to bring this thing full circle is when you think about the cash flow quadrant from Robert Kiyosaki's different books, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Cash Flow Quadrant, and whatever else he put it in, you've got, you know, all the different, you got the employee, you got self-employed, business owner, and investor. Everybody's trying to get to that investor quadrant where your money works for you and you don't really have to do anything. That is what's happening when somebody is in a syndication. For the business owner, that's what happens when you're in the joint venture. And that's where the majority of people's wealth is created, in that business owner frame. And so if you want to create, if you want to increase your ability to create wealth rapidly, you want to be in some form of business ownership. And so that's why we like that joint venture model, because we're able to actually pull the levers on the business. And, you know, in my bio, I'll say, or, you know, in my headline, that I buy broken apartment building businesses. When you get into multifamily, you're buying a business. It just happens to be attached to real estate. And so we're pulling the different levers of the business to increase the net operating income, which in turn increases the valuation of the property. And so, you know, hopefully those two lines of thinking will make that clear for your listeners and how it fits into the overall picture.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the analogy of the jumbo jet versus the fighters, but you know, it really makes it quite simple. I might have to use that one going forward, but you know, so getting into joint ventures, I know earlier you mentioned you saw what makes a good partnership, what makes a bad partnership. What are some things that people can do, you know, kind of avoid some mistakes when they're getting into a joint venture, make sure it's the right one?
Yeah, I don't think you'll ever actually know. Here's what I can offer to your listeners is you want to make sure that there's alignment of values, right? If you feel like that the person that you're doing business with is not honest and you're an honest person, you probably shouldn't do business with them, right? If you guys don't have alignment of goals, say I want to buy 1,000 doors and you want to buy 100 doors. Our interests are only aligned until you hit the 100 door mark, and then I can continue to go on. If you want to invest in Class A properties where everything's super nice and it's someplace you would live, and I want to invest in workforce housing because I want to execute a different business strategy, then you know our values aren't aligned. And so when it comes time to make a decision, we're not going to be in agreement on those decisions based on our values. And so, you know, I think that is absolutely the most important thing. The other thing, you want to make sure that you're educated. If you're showing up and you're just waiting for people to tell you what to do, that isn't going to make the partners happy in the deal. And I think the best way I can describe this is, you know, you got your dog, you got a tennis ball, you throw the tennis ball, the dog goes against the tennis ball, brings it back. Nobody really wants that. They don't want to have to throw the ball. Like eventually that gets tiring. You enjoy it initially, but then it gets tiring and you want the dog to go do something himself, right? And so we want people to come to partnerships that can add value. And I guess the last thing I can say is you want somebody that's going to value your input and your questions. And so if you're coming into the deal and you're not comfortable with something, you want to be able to ask that question. Even if it's something that shouldn't be worried about, you want to be able to ask the question and get feedback from the people in the group to make sure that that rock is turned over. Because coming in with fresh eyes and not being cynical is a great way to find value creation in the deal. And a lot of people who are more seasoned operators are not interested in hearing that type of stuff. And so you got to make sure that, you know, whoever you're partnering with, regardless of the level, that they're interested in teaching and being taught. And so I think those things make for the best partnerships, at least they have in my experience.
Right. Yeah. And you know, you're getting into it, you know, if it could just be for a property as you find out, but during that duration of while you have that, you know, you're essentially married to them. You know, you don't necessarily have to do it for the long run. You know, you might find out it's not the right one, but boy, for that one, if you get into a bad JV, you know, that can potentially turn you off of, you know, investing in apartments. And that's not something that you want. You don't want one bad experience to ruin a lifetime of potential and opportunity there. But yeah, I just being around and teaming up with people that have the same values as you, you know, that really speaks something because, yeah, like you said, if there's someone that's not very honest and you are, you know, that's one of your core values, it's going to be, could be quite the predicament you get in down the road. So great stuff. But yeah, you've had so much great insight for our listeners. So thank you again. Just a few quick wrap up questions here before we close this thing out. So what does the word retirement mean to you?
freedom, right? Location freedom, time freedom, being able to go and do what you need to do without much regard for what happens if you don't show up in a specific place at a specific time.
Was there a book or an event? I know you kind of alluded a little bit to it earlier, but was there a specific book event that really kind of was that driving, that last little piece to push you into pursuing multifamily investing?
Can I use a movie? Because the movie is what did it.
That, the Matrix, whatever it was.
Yeah, I mean, The Matrix was the movie where I realized that, you know, you don't have to conform to the status quo, and that there's people living an alternative reality in the space. And they figured out, and you know, I don't want to belabor this point, but you know, as a kid, I used to sit in the front yard with my mom. And on Thursdays, Liney would come around on the trash truck hanging off the back. And I always had Tonka toys, and I loved big machinery. And when he would throw the trash in and pull the lever, it was one of the most exciting parts of my day. Right. And he would be home at 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I was like, Mom, I want to be a trash man when I grow up. And she said, baby, that's not going to afford you the lifestyle that you want to live. You need to get a job that's going to be able to pay for the Nikes and all the nice things you like. My mom gave me great advice. There was one mistake in that advice. I needed an income stream that was going to pay for the lifestyle I wanted. It didn't need to be a job. And so, you know, my dad will work Carolina half day, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. And, you know, I would always, I'd have to wait for him to come home so we could eat dinner. Some days I would get frustrated because I played really hard, right? I was hungry. But, you know, with that said, you know, he showed me what hard work was, and he provided a more comfortable life and so on and so forth. And so I thought, like, you have to work like super hard all the time, and it had to be a grind. And I didn't really understand that you could have freedom, produce really big income, and make a positive impact on the community. And I feel like that's what multifamily did. And it, when I pair that with watching The Matrix and thinking about it at a bigger level, I really began to, you know, understand what it's like to be in an alternative reality.
Yeah, awesome. It's always interesting to hear what was that thing that made people finally, yep, I'm doing it. So I gotta say, first time I've heard a movie, but hey, bless that movie for getting you into it. So awesome stuff. How do you like to give back?
So we've got two podcasts. One's called Dreamcatchers, where we tell the stories of people that have exited the Matrix. And then the other one is Multifamily Missteps, or Myers Methods Presents Multifamily Missteps. And the goal with that podcast is to get experiences from real operators and pull back the curtain and let people understand what it's really like to be in the business. I think a lot of people come on podcasts and pretend like everything goes well and there's no challenges. And our podcast is focused on challenges and how they got fixed, because, you know, those stories don't get told. Those aren't the headlines. And we've had people from all over the country come on and share their stories. And that's free content. We also have a community on Facebook to support the podcast. And I guess the last thing I can offer is, you know, if your listeners want to jump on to MyersMethods.com and grab a free 4-step guide on the details of why we like syndication or JVs more than syndication, you know, they can get that for free for a trade of their email address.
Great. And how can listeners find out more about you? I know you just mentioned MyersMissteps.com, but where else can they go to find out some more about you?
Yeah, I mean, so MyersMethods.com is going to give you the most personal piece of information. I've been on probably 35 podcasts in the past year, so you can hear more of my story on some of those. And then I guess the last thing, if people want to connect with me on LinkedIn, I'm Jerome Myers, M-Y-E-R-S, and you'll find me in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for the time and, you know, providing just some great insight to our listeners. And again, it's, you know, a little bit more of touching on the real side of getting into it. And, you know, it's not going to be all sunshine and rainbows. And I know, certainly encourage, and the links will be in the show notes for for dream catchers and multifamily missteps. I know I will certainly be checking those out some more, and encourage the listeners to as well. But thank you again, and take care, sir.
Thanks for the opportunity, Derek. I really appreciate it to be able to share with your audience.
Absolutely. Thank you, everyone, for tuning into this week's episode of Apartment Investing for Early Retirement. Please be sure to rate and review wherever you listen to podcasts, and check us out on Facebook and Instagram. The links will be in the show notes. And if you enjoy the show, please be sure to share it out on social media so that we can reach more and more people to help educate them about the opportunity that multifamily investing provides to help reach their version of retirement sooner than later. Take care, everyone.